You have over 200 million higher education students globally. Textbooks only serve the needs of about 40 million of those, specifically in Europe, UK, and the US. Through a model like Pelago, essentially, you can make this accessible to everyone across the world.
Welcome to Communicating Purpose. I'm John Higginson, founder of purpose-led communications agency Higginson Strategy. Higginson Strategy is a PR and public affairs specialist that supports organizations making the world a better place. Our guest today is Gauthier van Mulderen, the CEO and founder of Pelago, a game-changing online platform for educational ebooks dubbed the Spotify for textbooks. Gauthier's journey began as a student at the Cambridge Judge Business School, where he found himself spending hundreds every year on textbooks and wondered why there wasn't a more modern solution. Describing himself as fascinated by the opportunity to tap into the student market, Gauthier already had two student-focused ventures before this one under his belt, Teenage Tourist, which he launched at age 19, and student marketing company Iconic Matter, which sold in 2015. Launching this latest company, Pelago, in 2017. It's an affordable monthly subscription model which has made educational resources accessible for approximately 500,000 individuals across the world to date. Gauthier, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Just tell me a bit more about your background and what led you to where you are today.
Sure. Hey, John, it's lovely to be here. So I'm from Belgium originally. Moved around quite a lot when I was a kid. Did my undergrad in Italy and then I did my postgrad in the UK. Yeah, so basically when I was at university, the main pain point I had was textbooks were really, really expensive. I'd spend £200-300 on a book. I'd read two chapters of the book and never use it again. And what was really interesting at a similar level, I noticed that all my friends were either downloading content illegally from websites or they would buy secondhand books. And I'm sure similar to you, I use, you know, a subscription service for my movies, a subscription service for my music. And I thought, okay, surely, you know, especially when it comes to textbooks or learning, I should be able to have a subscription service. I don't want to own these books. I just want to access these books. Started to do a bit of research and I noticed that on the publisher side, publishers were losing a lot of money as well. So if we look at the major publishers, their higher education, so the kind of textbook revenues decreased by more than kind of 50% in the last 6 years alone. So on the one side, students finding books too expensive. On the other side, publishers not able to monetize due to the secondhand book markets. And so that's the solution we've built. So a simple subscription service where for the price of a single book, you get access today to millions of books in seven different languages. And we have users in more than 190 countries. So really become a global product.
Great. And I remember having been at university a while back now, and also at college and school as well, that some of these textbooks were huge, weren't they? And so it isn't just the cost, it's the actual dragging around in your rucksack, as it was then, really quite heavy books, where, as you say, you might really only be accessing one chapter at that time, but some of these textbooks have got a lot more information than someone needs. So that sounds like such a great product. Tell us about some of the challenges that you've encountered so far.
So I think, you know, building a startup, you have challenges every day from some people trying to hack you to publishers who don't want to work with you. I think some of the bigger challenges we faced was the complexity around internationalizing. I wish we had done this earlier on in our business, but we kind of started to internationalize in 2019. And now I'd say 90% of our business is outside the UK. So some of the complexities with internationalization are local tax jurisdictions, pricing, payments, all that stuff, which we managed to get around. I think another kind of fundamental challenge for Pelago as a business was a bit of the chicken and the egg problem of to get more users, you need more content. How do you get more content? You need more users. So it took us time to get those publishers, but now we have over 9,000 and it's working really, really well. And then, you know, some other sort of challenges have been on a personal level, maybe growing as the company scales. So, you know, when we're three guys in a room, it's quite easy to communicate, to organize the company. But as you scale, you need more structure, etc. It's been very fun, but also challenging at sometimes.
Yeah. And tell me how many people that you've got now in the company?
About 125.
Yeah. So that's a really good position to be in. And I know that you've raised funds as you've gone through as well. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so I've raised just over $75 million to date. That was over kind of three, four rounds. The biggest round we raised was just under $50 million in March 22. and kind of different types of angels or investors, I should say, as you're scaling the company. So our first round was really much angels who believed in the vision and, you know, on paper had not much to show, right? No publishing background, never really built a global scalable company. And as we kind of, the later stage investors are more what I'd say growth equity or looking for a return in a sort of 6-7 year horizon. And the business has been massively de-risked, right? The business model works, you have scale, you're selling globally. Now it's about optimizing and adding new products and exciting parts of the business. But an angel took way more risk on me than the investors in the last round.
Great. And just for those kind of founders out there that might be thinking about funding as well, how much of the business have you retained ownership of yourself after that?
Sure. I mean, it depends, but roughly kind of rule of thumb is anywhere between 15 to 20% is how much you sell at every consecutive round. And then, of course, you split it up with co-founders. And then at Palego, we've put about 12 to 13% aside for our employees. I think it's really important that as the company scales, our core members of the team also see a shareholder uplift. And you know, they've been working and dedicating so much of their time and energy to the success of Palego. They should get upside of that as well.
Great. Now, tell us about some of your communicating Palego. What have you found most effective as a marketing tool to let students know about it?
Yeah, so maybe taking a step back, we have two routes to market. We have our business B2B market, where universities and institutions buy Palego in bulk for all their students. And we've got some amazing clients like University of West London in the UK. But today we've got over 260 clients globally who are buying Palego for all their students. And from that perspective, one of the best communication channels is essentially word of mouth and people loving the product. What we've noticed is when a professor uses Palego or starts to engage with the content, they go, wow, this is amazing. They talk about it with their fellow professors and they might go to the dean or the chancellor of the university saying we should buy this for our students. So word of mouth is incredibly powerful there. On our consumer business, one of our biggest growth strategies has been SEO. Essentially, from an SEO perspective, we create unique content which gets indexed by Google and that generates a lot of traffic back to the platform. In terms of other communication strategies, of course, we do email onboarding and things like that, but those are kind of the two biggest marketing channels for us on each division.
Great. And if we can go a little bit deeper into SEO, because a lot of our listeners are professionals in this field, so they've got quite detailed knowledge of that SEO tactic. Are you talking writing articles on the subjects with those keywords in them so that as students are typing into Google, say, I want to find a digital textbook, those things are coming up there. Are you doing pages and articles for SEO?
Essentially, we have three strategies. So the first to increase domain authorities, to increase your ranking into Google, is creating high quality content on the back of some of the books that we have on Palego. So reach out to specific experts in the field and you can find what we call study guides, which gives you a high level overview of a specific subject. So that's number one. The second for content is for every single page we have on Palego, we create a unique URL, which gets indexed by Google. So every single chapter or every single title, sorry, has its own kind of website, which gets indexed. And when you're searching for that title in Google, Palego will come up as one of the results. And what's interesting is we managed to take people away from piracy into a paid premium channel through this SEO strategy. And then the third, and this is a bit more recent with AI, we are now taking out the keywords of all our books and we're now adding these onto the book pages. And so if you're searching for a specific theme, you know, it could be anything around, you know, the implications of inflation to the UK economy, Palego will extract that content from some of our most popular books and you'll find that as a search query. So that's
fantastic.
Kind of how we divided our SEO strategy today.
Great. Is that AI tool out and working now?
Yeah. So AI Researcher was launched on the 11th of April. Essentially, the really exciting thing about AI Researcher is one of our challenges we faced was having millions of books behind a paywall. If you're a student, you want to search for a specific subject or specific theme, how can you surface the most relevant content? And so we've built a knowledge layer on top of the content layer that brings you specifically to the right chapter or paragraph of the book or passage, essentially. So that's really powerful for essentially finding content that's more relevant to your field of study, quicker and faster and more efficiently.
Great. What have been your biggest kind of challenges along the way? You've kind of just pointed there to that chicken and egg scenario, which is similar to every business out there has that chicken and egg, almost every business as they start up. Is there anything that you can particularly point at that was a struggle for you?
I think there are loads of struggles. Fundraising is a big struggle emotionally, right? When you get lots of rejections, at the end of the day, what I've learned is fundraising is a numbers game. You'll probably get 10 no's for one yes or 100 no's for two yeses. And so that does take its toll. Yeah, and then I think another really big challenge just for me has been scaling the operations and processes. Once you're a much bigger company, you need much more structure, and that does require a lot of work. So today we're optimizing, yes, for speed, but also operational efficiency, which in the early days, you're just in survival mode and you just want to get things out as quite quickly as possible. I think another challenge we had was maybe the implications of good design. So one of the things I've often realized as a big mistake is we used to build things without talking to our users. And now we have much more of a research-driven approach to building products. So before investing our tech teams or engineers in, you know, building the software, we might get our designers or our PMs to talk to the users ahead of time to see if it's something that makes sense. And that is a cheaper, more efficient way to build product.
And the podcast is called Communicating Purpose. And all of our guests are purpose-driven. Pelego has a very, what feels like a clear purpose to it. But what does purpose mean to you?
It's a good question. So to me personally, I think I want to work on something that I'm excited about and that has a strong mission or a strong vision. And essentially, Pelego's mission is to make educational content more affordable to all. And it's something we can all resonate, right? If you think about it, you have over 200 million higher education students globally. And today, textbooks only serve the needs of about 40 million of those, specifically in Europe, UK, and the US. Imagine you're a student in, you know, maybe Central Africa, where the economics of textbooks, because print is so complicated to distribute, it's very hard to do, very expensive. Well, through a model like Pelego, essentially, you can, as a streaming service, you can make this accessible to everyone across the world. So I think when we talk about purpose, it's how do your team members, how do you as an individual wake up every morning on a mission that energizes you? And I think our purpose is very much that mission. And candidly, some people could probably go and work at other companies and be paid better, but because they have a purpose and a mission at Pelego, they probably are very happy to work on their day-to-day. And I think that's quite important as well.
Yeah. Absolutely. Where do you personally get your news from?
Oh, good question. I use Twitter, and on Twitter I follow journalists. My favorite outlet is the FT. I don't read it on a daily basis, but I will buy the FT once a weekend. I'll try and switch off my phone on a Sunday and read it from A to Z for like 1 or 2 hours. And that gives me enough information for the week. I think if you look at the news on a daily basis, it does affect me as well for my mental health. So a bit of Twitter, and then, yeah, FT on the weekends.
Yeah, and you buy the print edition of it, do you? So you can actually switch off
terrible.
The phone.
I should be like a full digitally nomad kind of guy and 100% digital. But because my job is every day on the laptop, on the phone, on screen time, I find it incredibly refreshing to have a bit of offline time. And I actually say that back in the book business, as if I'm going to read a book on the beach, like a trade title, I might actually buy it in print as well. Print is an amazing product, but it's becoming more of a luxury product in my view.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I was just in Waterstones this morning buying my two books that I could have downloaded on my Kindle for less money. But I'm going on holiday next week and I'm going to be on the beach. And I just prefer that kind of sense that you just fold over the corner of the page, you know where you are in the book without looking at lock number 496 or whatever it is. Yeah. And the other thing that's really valuable, I think, about print newspapers that you don't get on digitally is you know the value that all these high-level journalists have put on each story. So you know which story is the splash page one news story. You know which is page three, which is the second most important paper, because your eyes fall on three before they land on two. So the more important stories are going to be three and then two. And it's, you know, which one's the lead, you know, which one is the anchor sat at the bottom of the page. And when you're on a website, it's quite hard to tell the importance of stories. All you can see there is the ones that are read the most by the reader, but you don't have that curation that has been done by professionals. So that's another reason why we're great lovers of print newspaper. We still get all the papers in every day. And as you say, having a weekend paper, I love getting a weekend paper as well and getting the different sections and coming off my phone. That's really important to me as well. Are there any other mediums that you listen to or watch? It doesn't have to be news, but anything else that you could recommend to our listeners?
Yeah, I am using quite a bit of the podcasting tools on Spotify specifically. I'm quite enjoying the new audiobooks that they've released. Depends on which kind of flavor, but I am using that a bit more. And then The Economist Espresso is quite good. I don't know if you know, that's like 5 minutes of news in the morning. I find that quite helpful. Sometimes I'll dip into that. But no, I'm not like one of those entrepreneurs that wake up at 4 o'clock, do some deep journaling, read 6 books and listen to 9 podcasts. I think there's about a healthy balance.
And what do you do to relax at the same time? What are you doing while you're listening to podcasts?
I quite like doing sports. I think that's really important for me. And then right now, work is taking a big component of my work week in the week. I've realized that I get quite a lot of energy from being out and about in nature, doing hikes, those kind of things. So even though I'm London-based, I try and sometimes get out of London for a bit, as much as I can, really.
Gauthier Van Mulderen, CEO of Pelego. You've been speaking to me, John Higginson, on Communicating Purpose. If you'd like to know more about how Higginson Strategy supports purpose-led organizations, please visit higginsonstrategy.com.